Peabody, Emmy, Grammy, Oscar, and Tony Award-winning 98-year-old Mel Brooks, following a full-length screening of Blazing Saddles on the big screen. For further information and tickets, visit peacocktheater.com and kpfk.org.
You're listening to KPFK 90.7 FM in Los Angeles and on the web at kpfk.org, Pacifica Radio for all of Southern California and beyond.
Welcome to Sojourner Truth. Thank you for staying with us. This is your host, Margaret Prescott. Today, we're going to dig deep into two elections, critical elections that have happened in Europe, the election in France, as well as the UK. Our guests include Benoit Martin, who is with Payday Men's Network. And Benoit actually is on the ground in France at the moment. And we'll also be speaking with London-based Crystal Amos, who is with Women of Color and the Global Women's Strike, about the election in the UK. We live in a global world. We're all interrelated. So on Sojourner Truth, we work to bring directly to you news and views on local, national, and international policies and stories that affect us all. And we draw out how those of us most impacted, women, communities of color, and other communities are responding. We also discuss the interrelationship between art and politics. Now for our news headlines.
For Pacifica Radio, I'm Christina Onnested. A coalition of France's left and center-left parties won a majority of parliamentary seats, delivering a defeating blow to the far right that was projected to win weekend elections. Thousands rallied to celebrate in the streets of Paris and other cities with fireworks and chants Sunday. As the National Popular Front coalition won 182 seats. President Emmanuel Macron's centrist party won 168. With a far-right national rally in third place, receiving 143 seats. The left coalition failed to garner enough votes to win an outright majority. It's asked President Emmanuel Macron and the prime minister to resign. Macron is keeping the two in power for now. If the left and center cannot reach alliance, the nation faces a political gridlock, which would be unprecedented. Jean-Luc Mélenchon, head of France's unbowed leftist party, hailed their win.
Un magnifique élan de mobilisation civique s'est affirmé.
He said a magnificent surge of civic mobilization has taken hold. Our people have clearly rejected the worst-case scenario. Tonight, the National Rally Party is far from having the absolute majority commentators were predicting. The coalition, which also includes Greens, has pledged to raise the minimum wage and roll back unpopular pension reforms by Macron that increase the age of retirement. President of France Unbowed in Parliament, Mathilde Panot, told media they will recognize Palestine as a state in the coming weeks. A reformist candidate won Iran's runoff presidential election Saturday, the AP's Charles de Ledesma reports.
Iran reformist Masoud Pereshkian, a heart surgeon and lawmaker, beat hardliner Saeed Jalili by promising to reach out to the West and ease enforcement on the country's mandatory headscarf rules. People in Iran's capital Tehran share their reactions to the news. Taxi driver Mohammed Sharif Najad tells the AP, everyone is a bit more glad, adding Pereshkian should ease the economic pressure in the country. I just want a normal life, but I can't make ends meet. I'm always in debt. While local resident Mahmoud Mohammadi says to lift the sanctions, Pereshkian should first reach an agreement with world powers and see what their demands and our demands are. I'm Charles de Ledesma.
President Joe Biden tried to defend his record over the weekend and today with radio and TV interviews to show the nation of his cognitive ability after an abysmal debate with Donald Trump last month. Still, Biden used teleprompter during his ABC appearance and asked certain questions on two radio stations that were scripted by his campaign. House Republicans are now calling for a hearing on Biden's cognitive decline and who, if any, has tried to withhold information from the public about it. In a letter sent to congressional Democrats today, Biden rejected any calls to step down and said if anyone wants to challenge him, they could do so at the Democratic National Convention next month in Chicago. Meanwhile, Republican presidential candidate Donald Trump is distancing himself from Project 2025, which has been coined a blueprint for autocracy. Trump wrote on social media Friday he has no idea who's behind it and called parts of it absolutely ridiculous and abysmal. But reporting from The Intercept finds several Trump administration former officials are behind Project 2025, like Peter Navarro, Trump's 2016 campaign advisor and former director of the Office of Trade and Manufacturing Policy. He was sentenced to prison for refusing to cooperate with a congressional inquiry into the January 6th insurrection. Navarro is among a host of Trump officials who wrote portions of Project 2025. Catherine Carley reports.
We are in the process of the second American Revolution, which will remain bloodless if the left allows it to be.
Kevin Roberts, president of the Right Wing Heritage Foundation, defends Project 2025, a roadmap for a second Trump term Roberts helped write. That plan calls for national abortion and contraception bans, an expansion of presidential powers, cuts to Social Security and Medicare, profoundly limiting the FBI, and firing any federal employee not loyal to Trump. Trump is denying knowledge despite some top advisors working on it. Florida Senator Marco Rubio, a potential VP pick, distanced the campaign from Project 2025, calling it just the work of a think tank.
They come up with ideas. They say things. I like Heritage Foundation. I agree with some of the things they stand for, but there's a bunch of scholars and people that turn around and work on different projects. But our candidate for president is Donald Trump.
The Biden campaigns as its evidence that Trump and his allies are a threat to democracy. I'm Catherine Carley for Pacifica Network and Public News Service.
Officials in Ukraine say Russian missile attacks killed at least 31 people and injured 154 across the country. One missile struck a large children's hospital in the Ukrainian capital Kiev, killing at least seven. Talks on a ceasefire in the Gaza Strip are expected to resume this week. Several officials say Hamas has softened its demands after 9 months of war. Hamas has appeared to drop its long-standing demand Israel promised to end the war as part of any ceasefire deal. Israeli Prime Minister Benjamin Netanyahu's office says Israeli negotiators will resume talks this week with Hamas. Israeli forces have deepened an operation in Gaza Strip's largest city, Gaza City, forcing thousands of Palestinians to flee the area that was ravaged in the early weeks of the nine-month-long war. The military says it's meant to weed out militants. I'm Christina Onnestad, reporting for Pacifica Radio.
Those were our news headlines, and we're going to start off our show with some results that many say are shocking, right? But we'll see if our guests, predicted this or what he thinks of the election results. But first, let's go to a clip now from CNN on the result in France.
A left-wing alliance came out as the strongest party in France's election on July 7th in a shocking result.
On est plutôt agréablement surpris. Ouais, parce qu'en fait, la France, c'est ça, c'est un peu la diversité.
The New Popular Front won 182 seats in France's parliament, according to the Interior Ministry.
C'est déjà un soulagement parce que c'est la France. Aujourd'hui, une France, elle est cosmopolite.
Tactical voting pushed Marine Le Pen's far-right party to third place, with the National Rally securing 143 seats.
C'est une déception. Donc, il va falloir attendre 2027, attendre que le pays encore se creuse un peu plus dans l'abîme, pour que les Français comprennent qu'il est temps de faire autrement.
But with no party winning a clear majority of 289 seats in Parliament, France is set to face uncertainty.
Ah, c'est un bon score.
Ah, oui.
C'est un marasme intégral qui se prépare. Voilà, c'est ce que je pense.
The winning left-wing bloc consists of a mix of parties, ranging from the far left to the more moderate socialists and ecologists. The results mean President Macron will likely have to appoint someone from this bloc as prime minister in a rare arrangement known as cohabitation.
So, Benoit Martin, welcome back to Sojourner Truth. It's been a while, Ben. How are you?
I'm good. Thank you for having me, Margaret. That's a very exciting day here in France.
I'll bet. But Ben, before we start the discussion, though, some of that clip was in French. Anything that perhaps our listeners didn't get that you wanted to share with us?
Yeah, I think that clip. Actually, the two speakers, one, the first one was from the Popular Front or supporter of the Popular Front, said that France now is a very cosmopolitan society, diverse society. The second speaker was clearly somebody from the far right who said, well, it was very disappointing. Obviously, they came last and we'll have to wait another 2 years until there's a presidential election to change things. And in effect, what was at the heart of the battle, of the electoral battle, but more generally of the actual major conflict in France, is the issue of racism and anti-racism. The far right had been, for a month now, after a snap election was called, presented as those who would probably take power. To give you just one example, there's been 27...
Yeah, Benoit, to help our listeners along, right. They know nothing about this.
Okay.
So we need to cover some basic things, right? What was the election for? Who was being elected? And what were the contending parties? Let's start there.
Okay. This was a parliamentary election that is a bit like you have in the U.S., the Congress. So people were electing their representative. There was 577 of them that were elected. There were three big blocs, really, that were bringing candidates. One was the far right, who had done quite a good score at the European election at the beginning of June, which in fact was the reason why I think President Macron decided to call for an election. So there's the far right on the one hand. In the middle, there's the party of Macron, who's really a kind of right-wing party who promote austerity and really promote the interests of multinational and all that.
Right, and Macron is now the President Emmanuel Macron of France.
That is correct. Okay. Mm-hmm. And in France, you have a system where the president have a lot of power and then you have a parliament, a bit similar maybe to the U.S. from that regard. And the third bloc is the New Popular Front, which is a coalition of political party, as the CNN clip mentioned, but not only political party, it has to be said. It really triggered many organizations, be they trade union, community organization, artists, intellectual, and all sort of people. So there were these three blocs who presented candidates for over a month. Yeah.
Yeah, and so we do want to get into the details, Benoit, but again, helping our listeners along here, this election happened in two parts, right? There was a part one, and then there was another part that happened this past Sunday. Explain that to us. What was the result of the first part of this election, and what was the result of the second part of the election? Benoit.
France has a two-round system whereby in the first round, candidates who do not get the majority, that is 50% plus one, those who don't have that majority, but who do score quite well, they have to have like 12.5% of, it's a bit technical, but they are then put in a second round. In the first round, you had about 32 representatives from the Popular Front that were elected and 37 from the far right.
And again, the Popular Front is more the progressive, the Progressive Front. And that is, the name of the far right party again?
It's it's known as Le Pen Party because of right. Marine Le Pen and her father. But it's, the name is Rassemblement National, which is a national rally, if you like, in English.
Okay, right.
So in the first round, about 70-something MP were elected. So the vast majority, something like 500 MP representative parliamentary, needed to be elected again. So that's what happened yesterday. In the meantime, there was a whole discussion between a candidate to block the far right being elected. So, for example, where you have three candidates, the left decided to, and if the left was in third place at the first round, they decided to withdraw their candidate so that to avoid splitting the vote between three candidates, there would only two candidates in the second round, which made it easier to beat the far right, if you like, because the expectation was that the vote that the third candidate would have would be in transfer to the candidate that was not the far right.
Well, that let seems me ask to, you this, Benoit, yeah. because a lot of people are looking at what happened in France, mm-hmm. given the upcoming presidential elections in the United States. But right. as you say, what happened after the far right did pretty well in the parliamentary elections in Europe, right? And mm-hmm. then they didn't win outright in the first round of the elections. They went to the second round because they didn't have that majority.
Yeah.
But your next point is really critical, and I want to underscore this, which is that the left came together and withdrew their candidates because there were some other candidates running that they thought would have split the vote. Now, this is really mm-hmm. important. I was talking earlier with Selma James, Benoit, we worked with her, and she was talking about in the lead up before World War II, before the Nazis Hitler came into power, that the left wasn't able to do what the left did in France. They were not right. able to come together. And as a result, Hitler came into power. So mm-hmm. How did all of that happen in terms of, people are wondering, how did the left manage that? What led to that kind of coming together by some organizations that are likely disparate in some ways, Benoit?
I think there are two explanations I could provide. One is people have realized the danger of the far right. I just want to point out that the Le Pen party, the far right, is not a normal political party. It's not a party that, make a leaflet and explain their ideas and hoping to convince people. A lot of people in the national rally are actually convicted criminals. They're people who have, committed racist attack on people, including with arms in some occasion. You have people who are anti-Semite, who think that the Holocaust didn't really happen. There are people who are sexist, homophobic, who make statement and violent attack on these categories of society. So we're not talking here about a democratic party.
And what about immigration? Aren't they strongly anti-immigrant?
Mm-hmm. Absolutely. You're quite right to highlight that. In fact, that's that really is one of their main attack. And just to give an example, they've been promoting the fact that people who are what they call binational, that is, somebody would be, for example, from Italy and then go and live in France, become a French citizen, they would be then called a binational. Now, that represents 3 million people in France. These people, according to the far right, should not be able to have jobs in the public sector. That was one of their plan. Obviously, that was a beginning of their policy. Ultimately, they want to get rid of the migrant altogether. So
there's some racism underneath all that.
Absolutely, absolutely. Racism against immigrants, racism against black people, but also homophobic, Islamophobic and anti-Semite racism. They really try to divide society and create a climate of hatred in promoting some sort of pure French population, you know, trying to tell the so-called people, the white and people who've been living in France for a long time, that the problem is really the others, the immigrant, the, you know, the trans people, the gay people, and so on.
Benoit, I recall Marine Le Pen from some years back, and her father before her, very, very much to the right. And it seems as though what Marine Le Pen has done, she has curried up, because there's some 28-year-old, wasn't it, was the main candidate. But they have been, their policies, anti-immigrant, racist policies, you know, have been, this isn't new for them. No. But what seems to be new is the percentage of support that they've mm-hmm. gotten. Now, they did lose in the end, but tell us a little bit about that, though, because that is worrisome, right?
Yes.
That trend, that is, Benoit.
Right. I think it's true to say that there has been some support, an increasing support for the far right. If we look at the those who voted yesterday, one people out of three voted for the far right. Obviously, you could also look at it the other way and say two-thirds of the population rejected them. Nevertheless, one person out of three is quite a large number. Now, I think we have to look at the policy that the Macron government in the last 7 years now have been promoting. If you create poverty, if you create repression, people turn around and say, you know, we must try something else, and we are rejecting the current government. And a lot of the people who have been supporting the far right are not necessarily heavy racists in that sense. The party, thanks to the media, have been what is being called, you know, make it, they've made the party to look respectable, democratic. When they go to television, they speak well, they wear a tie and so on. But when you scratch the surface, you could see that these people have other practices and other policy behind the scene. So the media, who are owned by the big business, have really promoted them as well as a respectable alternative to the Macron government, who's been promoting austerity for many years. I think it's quite an important factor in that. And I just wanted to mention one fact, which I think is quite relevant. In the last 2-3 weeks leading to the election, there's been 27 polls about the election, and every single of them said, the far right is going to win, the far right is going to win, the far right is going to win. And that's why yesterday there was such an astonishment when the left eventually won and got in first place, because despite all that propaganda machine, people, when they went to vote, understood what was at stake. And the French people, you know, to their credit, realized that it was important to beat them, and they did.
Right. Yeah. And on that note, Benoit, we're going to continue this discussion. But just to share the sound with you, Jose, I think you're absolutely right. If we could share some celebratory sound from people who are calling out fascism, anti-fascist. Can we hear a little bit of that right now?
Yeah.
That clip. Siamo tutti antifascisti. Siamo tutti antifascisti. Siamo tutti. Okay. All right. Let's bring that down a little bit. Benoit, what's going on here? What are they chanting?
In fact, I think they're chanting an Italian anti-fascist chant. So you could see the international is going around. Basically, this clip was what happened last night when people were celebrating in Paris. and they were chanting that. I mean, that's been quite a popular chant that's been used in many, many protests, demonstration meetings. And I have to tell you, yesterday I was in Paris to look at the celebration. 90% were young people in their early 20s. Obviously, there were people of different age, but the vast majority were young people. So I think they've been really quite important in leading the opposition to the fascists, which is quite a good news because it's a long battle, and I think young people are ready for that.
Right. And Benoit, just to put this in a broader context, let's say in the lead up to all of this, because when you have been on Sojourner Truth before, you've been on when there were major strikes going on across the country by organized labor, massive protests that were shutting down Paris and other major cities. There was also the Yellow Jackets, I think it was, Yellow Jackets movement, etc. How did these movements play a role then in being able to kind of broker this agreement among the left to have the power to defeat the right? Benoit.
Well, I think these movements that you described that have been around for 4 or 5 years now, the Yellow Vests have been in 2019, the strike against the increase of pension age was early this year. These are really these movements, spontaneous movement, really, from people rejecting the policy of Macron, have really fed the program of the new Popular Front. So this is why one of the key demands have been incorporated in their program. And the Popular Front is very adamant that as soon as they will form a government, we're still waiting on that, as soon as they will form a government, they will reduce, they will abolish the pension and bring it back to what it was. They will increase the minimum wage. They want to increase the other wages as well. The other big movement that I've been feeding most recently is the Palestine movement. And the Popular Front is, in its program, want to recognize the state of Palestine, want to put forward an embargo on weapon and put some sanction against the state of Israel. So you could see how the movement of the street, week after week, months after months, years after years, have been inputting in the program and the practice of the new Popular Front. So I think that was quite important. Without this movement, you know, that I don't think the Popular Front would have been created on the one hand. And without this movement, that's my opinion, but it won't be able to continue unless people keep the pressure on, because we know it's already been one day and the right and the establishment is trying to say, well, you didn't really win. You haven't had the majority, blah, 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 blah. Macron has still not named a prime minister in the Popular Front, which he should be doing. So people have to keep the pressure in order for that program to be implemented. So right. I think there's that relation between, you know, the movement from people in their organization, in the street, in their workplace, in schools, and so on, and what, you know, representative and politician are doing within parliament.
Absolutely, to keep the pressure on. Again, this is Margaret Prescott, host of Sojourner Truth. Our guest is Benoit Martin. He is in France at the moment. He's with Payday Men's Network, and he generally follows very, very closely the movements and everything happening in France. And we are discussing the election that quite shocked, perhaps, people in the United States, people who had been reading those polls you mentioned, Benoit, that all predicted that the right wing would win. They were defeated. They did not win. And just recently, I think it was yesterday, a couple of days ago, Bolsonaro, formerly the head of president of Brazil, was touting the that the right wing would win in France. And in fact, they're winning throughout Europe and they're going to win in the United States and kind of touting that movement. So this clearly is a blow against that kind of thinking. So Benoit, we do want to bring in, Crystal is waiting to talk about the UK election. And we want you to stay with us because we want to have some interaction between the two of you. But in addition to the movement keeping up pressure now, what are the next steps with this? The media here, AP and others, are reporting that Macron has refused the resignation of his prime minister. So who knows what that means. But what's going to happen next in terms of how is this government going to be formed?
It's a good question, Margaret. I'm sorry if there's a bit of noise here, but it's a good question. We don't know, really. I think we'll have to see how things develop tomorrow and in the coming days. Macron, we have to remember, 2 years ago, the very same parliament where the Macron's party was ahead but was still a minority government, they obviously name a prime minister that was within their party. Now they're trying to do something different and, in a way, name a prime minister which is in the party that arrived second. That's pretty hard to swallow. So I'm not sure how things will develop and whether Macron can get away with it, frankly. So we'll have to see, I think. How it pans out.
Before we go to station break and bring Crystal Amos into this discussion, any particular person that has emerged as a voice for the Popular Front? I mean, how is that?
Absolutely. I think his name is Jean-Luc Mélenchon. He's been leader and founder of La France Insoumise, which is the unbowed France, which is an independent left radical in quote unquote movement. And I think that's quite an important thing to say here. When you ask how is it that the left was able to come together and how is it that the population decided to vote for them, is a lot to do with Mélenchon. Mélenchon was a candidate for president 2 years ago. He got 22%, which is quite high. Eventually, Macron was elected. But without his impetus, he wouldn't have created... there was also a coalition, by the way, 2 years ago when the parliament went to election. It was under another name. It was called the New Union, the New Popular Union. But what's particularly important is, as unlike, and maybe Crystal will develop on that, unlike other social democrat or left party or so-called left party, Mélenchon have always emphasized the fact that you have to have a breakaway program. And by that, he meant you have to tax the rich. You have to give people what they need. You have to increase their wages, their benefit. You have to be openly anti-racist. You have to welcome migrants. You have to be in support of Palestine. You cannot try to mimic the right and hope that you will get support from the people. That's not what people want. And I think Mélenchon showed that he was right because people wanted their program.
Right. And that's likely part of the reason that Macron's government was so unpopular, right? Because it was really, some people describe it as a center-right government. But Benoit, also very quickly, the soccer cup, the Euro Cup has been going on, a lot of, you know, attention on that taking place in Germany. But it was notable that in the middle of all of this, which is unusual for a soccer star, the French soccer player, black player Mbappe, spoke out about the importance of going out to vote. And everybody kind of knew what that meant, meaning oppose the right. So I imagine that, you know, not to underscore that too much, because clearly it was the movement on the street, but it was significant that the movement on the street was strong enough to have a major soccer star like Mbappe speak out in the way that he did. Any comments here?
Well, it's true. However, I have to say Macron line, if you like, was to say, I am the candidate of the middle. Do not vote for the extreme. And sadly, Mbappe took a bit that line. So,
oh wow,
not in so many ways. You see what I mean? He was really obviously inviting people to vote, but he was in a way saying, "Don't vote for the left, don't vote for the right, vote for Macron." He didn't say that, but mm-hmm. it was kind of implicit by when he said, "I don't support the extreme."
Right. Okay. Well, Benoit, you are going to stay with us, and we'll talk a little bit about that, because we also know that there have been riots, having rebellions around race and racism, you know, happening also in France. And I imagine on the one hand, you have the anti-immigrant sentiment and movement going on. But on the other hand, you have the anti-racist movement that's been going on, speaking out against police brutality, etc. So stay with us. We're going to take a very short station break, and coming back, we'll welcome Crystal Amos into this discussion. Another breaking news on the election in the UK. So we'll be right back. The late, great Bob Marley, "Chase Those Crazy Ball Heads Out of Town." And I imagine there's a way in which it happened in both elections in France and also the UK, although the UK is very much of a mixed bag, which we'll discuss with our guest, Crystal Amos. This is Margaret Prescott, host of Sojourner Truth. If you've missed any part of this hour from 10 this morning, for 90 days after that, just go to kpfk.org, scroll down to archives, click on Sojourner Truth. You'll be able to hear the show in its entirety. And we are also 24/7 on SoundCloud across the US and also internationally. Just go to Sojourner Truth with Margaret Prescott. SoundCloud, by the way, is a free download. And today we want to give a shout out to our SoundCloud listeners in the state of Mississippi in the United States, and internationally, a shout out to our SoundCloud listeners in Paris, France. Benoit, you should know, for some reason, one of our largest international listeners in SoundCloud, this is the Journal of Truth, are in Paris. I have no idea why.
That's right.
It's in English, but it tells you something maybe about what's happening there. But yeah, what I'd like to do now, before welcoming our guest, where we could discuss a bit about the UK and then have Benoit and Crystal interact with each other, why don't we go to a short clip now from Al Jazeera about the UK election. And that clip, you will hear the Prime Minister, who was roundly defeated, accepting defeat. Let's go to that clip now.
To the country, I would like to say, first and foremost, I am sorry. I have given this job my all, but you have sent a clear signal that the government of the United Kingdom must change, and yours is the only judgment that matters. I have heard your anger, your disappointment, and I take responsibility for this loss. Following this result, I will step down as party leader, not immediately, but once the formal arrangements for selecting my successor are in place. This is a difficult day at the end of a number of difficult days, but I leave this job honoured to have been your Prime Minister.
That was a clip you heard Rishi Sunak from the Conservative Tories in the UK apologizing, saying he's very sorry, but he is stepping down. Well, he was not stepping down. He was roundly defeated. His party, the Tories, were. I'd now like to welcome to Sojourner Truth Crystal Amos, who is with Women of Color and the Global Women's Strike based in the UK. For full transparency, Crystal and I do work together on a lot of mutual issues. Crystal, thank you for joining us.
Thank you.
Okay, so again, assuming for our listeners, we want to bring them up to scratch. What happened? There was an election recently in the UK. What was that election about? And who were the, I guess, the key names that people were keeping their eye on? There were the Tories, and then there's the Labour Party. And for our listeners, a lot of people equate the Labour Party in the U.S. with the Democratic Party, the Labour Party in the U.K. with the Democratic Party in the U.S. and the Tories, perhaps, with the Republican Party. But who were the names there involved?
You've already heard from one of them. That was the former Prime Minister Rishi Sunak, and he was roundly defeated, so that the Labour Party ended up at the election, which was to elect all of the members of the Parliament here in the UK. It was an election called at very, very short notice, which I think caught a lot of people out, because it wasn't expected until later in the year. But the net result really amounted to Labour winning 412 MPs compared to Tories getting 121. So it kind of looked like Labour had won by a landslide. But that, I think, is one of the illusions of the first-past-the-post system that we have here. And I've heard somebody describe it as a loveless landslide, because what most people wanted was they wanted rid of the Tories by any means necessary. And the leader of the Labour Party, who is Sir Keir Starmer, it's a bit odd to have a leader of a Labour Party with a sir in his name. When you say you equate the Tories, the Labour with the Democrats, I think you need to know something about who Sir Keir Starmer is. Because he came out supporting Israel's genocide. He actually is on record as saying that Israel had the right to defend itself by withdrawing food and water from Palestinian people. And he is also on record as receiving large cash payments from Labour Friends of Israel, as have many of his now cabinet members, including the new Chancellor of the Exchequer, Rachel Reeves. So you're looking at somebody who was deeply unpopular, particularly amongst the people that we canvassed, because when I say we, a number of us are in his area, and we openly canvassed to get rid of him and to try to get in somebody who was pro-Palestinian, who called for a ceasefire, and who, you know, it was had quite a good chance of really challenging Starmer. I mean, his name is Andrew Feinstein, and he's a former MP with Nelson Mandela's government. And he resigned after exposing corruption in the South African weapons industry. So he called for a ceasefire now, and that was his, and a number of independent some former Labour, but mostly independent people did the same thing.
So tell us his name again, Chrissy, the one that you all were canvassing for.
Andrew Feinstein.
Okay.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. And remarkably, given the length of time that he had to mount a campaign, he pulled 8,000 votes. Now, Starmer's vote was something in the region of 18,000 votes, which is not as many as he got last time. He got, that's 10,000 down on his previous vote, you know, to get him into, to keep him in, as an MP. And that was when Jeremy Corbyn was leader of the Labour Party. So I don't know how much your listeners would know, but Jeremy Corbyn, who was the leader of the Labour Party, was expelled and forced to stand as an independent.
He was expelled from the Labour Party, right?
He was expelled from the Labour Party, and he decided to stand again on a pro-Palestinian ticket.
Why was he expelled? Because, Chrissy, I do want to get some of this, because Labour, Starmer was going on about anti-Semitism in Labour and driving people out and that sort of thing. So tell us a bit about that, because that's also connected to what happened with Jeremy Corbyn.
Indeed it is, because there was a purge. And the purge was accusations and really spurious and absolutely unsubstantiated accusations of anti-Semitism in the Labour Party. And fundamentally, they blamed everything on Jeremy Corbyn as the leader, and that he had incited anti-Semitism. And I think once you, if your listeners want to find out a great deal of detail about that and how it happened, there's nothing better online than Al Jazeera's The Lobby, which is a four-part series which shows exactly how the Israeli embassy fundamentally interfered with British politics, and it was done by an undercover team from Al Jazeera. So there is history. There's history of what went on. And in fact, had that been really studied and listened to, we might have been in a very different place when it came to this election. But I think Ben described the propaganda machine, and it is massive. And in this instance, it was, they were able to hide the direct involvement of many of Labour's right-wing elements in that it fundamentally coup to get rid of not only Jeremy Corbyn, but a number of other left-wing politicians within the Labour Party.
Right. Chrissy, I should say that looking at mainstream press coverage here about Starmer, I'm looking at a New York Times headline, 50 Shades of Beige. They're talking about Starmer being very boring. Not only is he boring, but that he doesn't really stand for anything, that he sort of goes where the wind is blowing. Well, you know he does stand for something, because he opposes, he supports the genocide going on in Palestine. But the coverage, I'll have to say, have not really been favorable here in terms of Starmer. And the other thing is that it's being portrayed that he won, Labour won by a landslide. But as you're saying, it's not really as clear as all of that, because there, I saw some articles, I don't have the names in front of me, but there were some people who, for example, were pro-Palestinian, who won, surprisingly, and also Jeremy Corbyn was able to win back in his district. Exactly. So there seems to be, I don't know if that's like a third party movement or something, there's something going on there of people disaffected with both, with Labour. I mean, obviously disaffected with the Tories, the right wing, but also with Labour. Crystal. Well,
yeah, exactly. In fact, what's quite interesting when you look at the statistics is that Labour's share of the vote was only 33.7%. And that's the smallest majority of any government in British electoral history. And you don't read that in the mainstream media. And the turnout for voting at this one was 60%. And that's the lowest since 2001. And you don't read that either. It is being presented in a very different way to the experiences of those of us on the ground and in the grassroots. So, you know, there's a lot at stake here in terms of hiding who Starmer is. But what's very different in this election is that the Muslim support for the Labour Party, which has always been taken for granted, you know, those of us are people of colour will vote Labour, Boof. That has dropped by 50% since 2019. And many voters, especially women, Muslim or not, wanted the killing in Gaza to stop, and they want justice for Palestine. So, you know, when you're knocking on the doors and people are saying to the canvassers, the Labour Party canvassers, I can't vote for genocide, you get some indication of why it was that some of the independents actually got in on a pro-Palestinian agenda. Four of them were in largely Muslim constituencies, but they were, it was not only Muslim people who were voting for them. And Corbyn, who stood as an independent, he won by 24,000 votes, which is quite high, considering that Labour put up a candidate against him. That candidate got 16,000 votes. But wow. many mm-hmm. people who were voting still thought that Corbyn was in the Labour Party. And on top of that, he didn't have the Labour Party machinery behind him. But nevertheless, he won. And he won because of the hundreds of people, the people who volunteered, who came down from all over the country, really, to make sure that he held on to that constituency. You know, right. And that is very different. That is not something that, you know, I've experienced in all the time I've been voting or taking part in canvassing and so on. I've not seen that before. So, you know, you feel that something is different, something is afoot, and that people are no longer ready to just be quite as tribal as they were. And on top of that, some of the independents came very close to actually knocking out some of the big shots in Labour. I mean, one of the big shots being a real Labour right-wing hatchet called Wes Streeting, who is now in charge of the NHS, the National Health Service in this country. And everybody's really quite very deeply worried that he will privatise it. But a young Palestinian woman, a British Palestinian woman, stood against him and came within 518 votes of winning.
Wow. That's fantastic. Now Chrissy, looking at the clock, it's amazing how time flies. And I would like to bring back Benoit Martin into this discussion as well. But one thing that was noted that Starmer made a big point of is opposing the Rwanda plan of saying he's going to shut it mm-hmm. down. It's not going to happen. And Crystal, from your work, I know that you have done a lot of work in the organizations you're connected with opposing this Rwanda plan. So are people feeling confident now? First of all, just quickly tell our audience what the Rwanda plan is. And are people feeling confident that indeed it will now be put to rest? Crystal Amos.
Well, the Rwanda plan was brought in by two former Home Secretaries, one both Asian, by the way. And of course, you'll note that Rishi Sunak was Asian. So we had three Asian Conservatives backing a plan which involved anybody who came to the UK by what they determined were illegal routes. In other words, who came across the channel in a boat rather than, you know, coming, say, by an airport, that they had no right to make an asylum claim in this country, which, of course, is contrary to all international laws. So the government fought hard to keep that plan in place, and they spent millions going through the courts to try and keep it there.
And they were going to send these people to Rwanda, is that
the
right?
The idea was that they would be processed and sent straight to Rwanda, where their asylum claims would be considered. In other words, they were offshoring the whole process of asylum, making an asylum claim, which was just an outrage. And, you know, there was a long fight against it legally and by the grassroots everywhere and anywhere. Now, the idea that Starmer has put that at hold, I mean, I heard today that Tony Blair, another former Labour Prime Minister, said that that it should be brought back. I mean, it's just an outrage. So you don't know exactly what the Labour Party will do now it's in government.
Right. So as Ben wanted, Ben, thank you, Chrissy. And Ben, I want to bring you back here because your point is even, I mean, listening to Crystal and also what you know of the UK, the victory that people are celebrating in France of progressives and the left coming together to defeat the right, that's not the situation really with the election in the UK because the Tories were unpopular and Starmer is none too popular. People say he doesn't stand for anything. But your point is that in France, people are going to have to keep the heat on the street. Listening to what Chrissy is now saying about a previous prime minister talking about bringing back the Rwanda plan and who knows what will happen now that that election has happened. So I just want a quick final thought from you, Benoit, and then a quick final thought from you, Chrissy. We've got just about 2 minutes or so left. Benoit.
I think what we've seen in France, in the UK, and probably in the US is that you have two kind of progressive, for lack of a better word, progressive parties who present themselves as progressive. But some are mimicking the right and some are breaking away from the right and proposing something more akin to people's need, increasing their benefit, increasing their income, opposing repression, welcoming migrants. In fact, what's interesting listening to Crystal is that these independent candidates in the UK really have quite a similar program as the New Popular Front in France. So you have these two tendencies among progressive party. And from the success we've seen in France, it's quite clear to me that you have to organize on proposing policies that go along with what people need. And that's how you can win. Starmer is not going to get a lot of support in the long term. People will realize that he's just another Tory party, number two, and they will abandon him.
Right. Okay. Thank you for that. And Chrissy, a quick final thought from you.
Yeah, well, I think what's happening in France gives us all hope, you know, especially those of us who, you know, have got to continue the fight against the right wing in whatever whatever face it poses to us, because it's clear that it's hiding in plain sight. You know, so for the Labour Party, that is also the right wing. And we have to recognise that. And I think the independents, the success of them has helped us to build a grassroots movement, and that is going to be really important in the years ahead, not only in the UK, but, you know, for challenging the European leaders, whether it's Italy or Hungary, just to name a few. We are going to have to get international, and I think it's definitely on the cards.
Right. Well, thank both of you for joining us today, Benoit Martin and also Crystal Amos, and we look forward to hearing more. A lot of eyes on what happened in the UK as well as France, given the politics going on here in the United States and the presidential election coming up. So we'll see how all of this plays out, but thank both of you for joining us. Thank you. And today's show produced by me, that's Margaret Prescott. I'd like to thank Jose Benavides for his help with today's show. If you'd like a copy of the show, please contact the Pacifica Radio Archives at 1-800-735-0230 or go online to pacificaradioarchives.org. Stay tuned for more programming on your Pacifica station. Thank you for listening. This is your host, Margaret Prescott, and you all please stay well and safe.
Support comes from the Festival of Tabla, taking place over two rhythmically engaging days of Indian classical music and dance on Saturday, July 27th and Sunday, July 28th at the Soka University Performing Arts Center in Aliso Viejo, California. Artists from around the world unite to create an unforgettable cultural experience. Dive into a multitude of workshops from Indian rhythm on Western drums to playing raga music on the guitar. For more information and tickets, visit festivaloftabla.com and kpfk.org.
KPFK invites you to tune into The Global Village, weekdays from 11 a.m. to 1 p.m. Bringing you a global mix of hosts, seeking the universal soul and making musical connections between our geographical and musical cultures. That's The Global Village, KPFK's flagship music program, with new and familiar voices, Monday through Friday from 11 a.m. to 1 p.m., right here on 90.7 FM and online at kpfk.com.